welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 214 of the podcast, and today is 7th of April 2015. So I have a really fun interview with Tim Grawl today, and it didn't quite turn out how I had intended, which actually makes it far more interesting. There are lots and lots of podcasts now for authors, and I am trying to make sure I differentiate continuously by not talking about the same stuff. So although we do talk about some kind of marketing topics, we specifically talk about book titles, which I am fascinated about right now, and I'll come back to that in a minute. We also get into some productivity tips and mindset stuff and celebrating success, which I am particularly bad at, and I'm sure many of you are, the kind of finish a book and quick, get started on another one. Book launch, what's that? And also how to deal with all this stuff we have to do as introverts. So really interesting chat with Tim. I really enjoyed it, so I hope you do too. First, I have quite a bit to update you on and some useful stuff as well. I've been away in America. I'll come back to that. First of all, the useful stuff. I want to remind everyone of Indie Recon, which is running April 15th to 17th. Although if you're listening after that period, all the content will still be on the website, and it is particularly good content. There are some amazing speakers. I think there's sort of 50, 60 speakers from all sides of self-publishing, from, you know, how to sell a bazillion books with Barbara Freethy, Bella Andre, H.M. Ward, to newbie tips on, you know, which self-publishing service to use, how to do book covers, whole load of other stuff. You can check that out at indierecon.org, indierecon.org. It's free, so definitely register for that or check out the website and you'll be able to see all the content there. I've already recorded a 50-minute video on how to make a living with your writing, which will be going up. And I'll also be chairing a panel of top indies, which you'll be able to watch. It will be live streamed as well, so that will be fun. So yeah, indierecon.org, definitely check that out. And it's an annual event, so whenever you're listening to this, you can go and check out that website. Also, exciting book news, if you enjoy listening to my voice, which I hope you do because you get a lot of it on this show. Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, is now an audiobook on Audible, iTunes and Amazon. And of course, if you've already bought the ebook or maybe the print book, I'm not sure, you can pick it up at a reduced rate as a member or part of your subscription. And if you want to listen for free and you haven't joined yet, you can get a free copy by signing up to Audible for a 30-day trial, free 30-day trial, and get the book for free. So you can go to thecreativepen.com/free audio. And that will redirect you to a sign-up page. So yeah, very excited. I wrote a post on the ACX blog about all my lessons learned from recording my own book. So you can check that out too. And I'm really glad it's done. I enjoyed the process, but it was a lot harder than I expected. You know, given I'm someone who podcasts, reading a book is a lot more intense. So yeah, I'm really pleased with it though. So if you do download it and you like it, a review would be amazing. Reviews are so important, as we all know. Okay. Also, I have been away. I was at the PubSense Summit in Charleston in South Carolina. The weather was not as expected. It was cold and wet, and everyone was apologizing. But it was beautiful downtown, lovely houses in downtown Charleston. I felt very at home, all that kind of British influence. So yeah, that was lovely. It was a great conference, really interesting. I did a masterclass on Scrivener, panel on publishing journeys, and also a keynote on what I see coming for indie authors, getting excited about audio and Apple CarPlay and Google Auto and how that's going to really radically boost audiobook sales. And also mentioned virtual reality, which you all know is my hobby horse right now. It was really super fun. And I also went down to Savannah, which was, you know, in Georgia. I wanted to go there since I read Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil in the 90s, which was great. And I reread the book while I was in the town, which was fantastic. Really enjoyed that. I also met at, going back to PubSense, I met Jim Cookroll and Brian Cohen from the Sell More Book Show. Really nice to meet them in person. And in terms of the incestuous world of author podcasting, I obviously still have not met Johnny and Sean and Dave from the self-publishing podcast. So obviously that's on my hit list for next year at least. I also hung out with Mark Lefebvre from Kobo and, you know, people from Nook and Amazon and CreateSpace. And so it was really good. And you can hear a couple of interviews with me on the Sell More Book Show and also on the Author Marketing Institute podcast. And yeah, really, again, I think conferences, when you're a more mature, I say more mature because I'm so mature, you know, when you're not really going to the seminars. So I didn't really attend any seminars because I was a speaker. But I feel like going to these things is really great for meeting people in person. So I will certainly continue to go to conferences regardless of whether the actual sessions are useful to me personally. And I've, on that note, I've just booked New York for Thriller Fest in July. So if you're a thriller author and you're going to Thriller Fest, give me a shout on Twitter at The Creative Pen so I can organise some kind of meetup while I'm there. Other news that is very exciting, actually, and you know, there's nothing concrete, but basically I've signed with a new agent and we have some really exciting plans. He is incredibly experienced and, you know, lots of exciting possibilities coming up, and I'm very pleased about it because as I'm definitely at that stage where I need to scale. And an entrepreneurial agent is a great way to scale. So for example, I mean, I've talked about this before, but I can do audiobooks, ebooks, I can do print on demand. I've tried translations and it just stretched me too thin. And I don't want to do translations myself anymore. Yes, I want to sell foreign rights, but I definitely don't want to manage that all myself. It's just too much work. So I want to focus on creating the content, writing the books. I've spent the weekend writing a treatment for a screenplay for TV. So that's in the mix as well. We're also looking at gaming for my Arcane books, which, you know, are, you know, get this stone, find this Ark of the Covenant, kill the bad guy, you know, can definitely be gamified, you know, with female protagonists sort of active. Anyway, very exciting. I'm excited about gaming. I'm excited about TV, film, and other media rights. I'm excited about foreign rights sales and essentially working with, I think, for indies who want to get into this kind of bigger game, then working with entrepreneurial agents is a really good idea. And in the US, Kristin Nelson is kind of the most famous agent who works with indies. She brokered Hugh Howey's deals for Wool. Yesterday, Jacinda Wilder, who is a lovely married couple writing erotica, they got a 7-figure deal for, you know, through Kristin as well. So there are agents who absolutely appreciate the indie way, and this is what I'm now doing. I'm working with my agent, and I'll talk more about it when, you know, we have some concrete stuff. We've only really just signed and we're looking at everything we're doing. I will be rebranding and retitling my first three books and the Arcane series. We're also working on semantic analysis of all my reviews, which is really fascinating, so we can work out what others say about my work, because I've probably got nearing 1,000, well, 800, probably 1,000 reviews right now across all my work. So, you know, looking at what people actually say rather than what I say is my brand. So I hope to have a lot of this done by the next show so I can talk a bit more about that stuff. I will also be blogging all the detail as I can. But essentially, I just wanted to kind of mention that, and that I've got a lot of things happening at the moment, and I feel like it's all bubbling away, and hopefully something will bubble to the top. It's about blooming time. I was saying to my husband, I started writing my first book, How to Enjoy Your Job, in 2005, 2006. So if something happens this year, I will be a 10 year overnight success, as they say, which you hear about a lot. It's surprising, you know, when people get big deals and big things happen, it's often a 10 year overnight success. So anyway, fingers crossed, and I'll let you know. Well, not fingers crossed, I'm working blooming hard, but I love it. This life is so much fun. So yeah, anyway, really happy with that. Excitingly, this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I will include a little word from our sponsor in a minute. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon or who buy my books, including Business for Authors on audio. So on Patreon, you can support me with a few dollars or even just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month, less than a coffee a month. And thanks to Patreon new supporter, Shane Staffslian. Thanks, Shane. And thanks to all the supporters on Patreon. And thanks to everyone who buys my books or tries them out. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. All right, let's have the word from our sponsor and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Christina Potter, content specialist for Kobo Writing Life. We here at Writing Life are very excited about sponsoring the Creative Pen podcast and the chance to share this amazing resource for writers. I get the opportunity to connect with indie authors and publishers every day and help them load their content and sell books around the world. I encourage authors to have a look at the many opportunities through Writing Life to generate buzz about their books. One great way to do this is to enable your title for pre-order, which you can do by selecting a future activation date in the Writing Life portal. Check out other great tips on the Writing Life blog at kobowritinglife.com. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Creative Pen podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Tim Grohl. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. So just a little introduction. Tim is the author of Your First 1,000 Copies and the founder of Outthink, a firm that helps authors make money with online marketing tools. So Tim, there's so much in your book I could ask you about. And we talk about marketing a lot on this show. But first up, tell us a bit about your background in writing and publishing and marketing.
Well, I kind of came into it backwards. I was a programmer and had built up a whole network of blogs like early on. Actually, I built my first blog on the first release of WordPress. So that's how long ago it was. And I was just freelancing, doing programming and other things and helping people with their marketing, but everywhere from like individual people to big companies. And I started working with a couple different authors just kind of randomly because I was fans of them and I could see they needed help. So I reached out to them and I kind of came to this point where I could keep working with like bigger companies where I could probably make more money, but probably end up shooting myself. Or I could work with people that like I really respected and liked their work. And I've always been a big reader. And so the idea of working with authors was just kind of a dream come true. So that's when I kind of got into working with authors full time and helping them figure out how they can sell books.
Oh, fantastic. So you're actually quite technical then, your programming background.
Yeah. Like my website, everything. I build all that kind of stuff. And early on, it was a big help because there were so few people that knew the nuts and bolts of actually building stuff and understood online marketing. So it helps to kind of understand, and it helps me now too as I give advice, because I try to steer away from stuff that I know is crazy complicated to do and just focus on the easy stuff that most people can do.
Yeah, which is great. So, you know, as I said, there's lots of things we could talk about, but one of the things I noticed on your site, you have this resource about book titles. Now,
yeah.
And you talk about how important book titles are. And right now I'm going through an interesting phase of about to change some book titles. So it's a fascinating topic. So I wonder if you could, you know, talk a bit about why the book title is so critical and what are some tips on, let's do non-fiction specifically first, and then we can maybe talk about fiction. But for non-fiction book titles, you know, what are your tips?
Well, I mean, the book title is important because that's the first thing that people see. So I think that's pretty intuitive of, you know, the book cover and the book title, especially when it comes to Amazon. You know, that's what people are just scanning for, especially when you're looking at that list of, you know, customers also bought. All you see is the cover and the title. And so especially for nonfiction, you know, the title paired with a really descriptive subtitle is really, really important. But the problem is that you're way too close to the project to make a good decision. You have kind of in your mind what you think it should be called, and I will almost guarantee you you're wrong. And so I really wanted to figure out a simple way to get a lot of people's opinion, because even your own fans aren't good because they know you. And you want people that have no idea who you are, that are just making, you know, those split second decisions on the title, to help you make the decision. And so I had heard a long time ago this story about Tim Ferriss, where with the 4-hour work week, it, like, he had to change the title at the last second. And so he ran this whole thing through AdWords, and whichever ad got clicked most, that's what turned into the title. But that's expensive and actually really complicated to pull off. So I found this tool called PickFu, PickFu.com. Mm. And you can just, you put in like a question and two answers, and they send it to 50 random people through Amazon's, I think it's Turk Engine or something like that.
Mechanical.
And people just pick whether they like A or B the most. And so I just do it like a bracket. So I went out and I just asked a bunch of friends for titles. And I think I started with 8 different titles. 2 of them were mine, and the other 6 were just people gave them to me. And they were just like, one of them had like cursing in it, and one, because I'm like, I don't care if it'll get people to buy the book, I'll be happy. And so your first 1,000 copies, a friend of mine gave it to me. He's like, oh yeah, you know, because, you know, authors are just worried about just getting that first 1,000 copies. And I'm like, and I talk about the 1,000 number as a really important number anyway. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's kind of a crappy title, but I'll throw it in the mix. And like, I threw it in the mix, and basically what I did is I just pitted titles against each other and just kept A-B testing them until I got down to 2 titles. And every single time, your first 1,000 copies won. It beat every other title. And so then I did the same thing with subtitles. Once I had a title, I went back through and came up with 8 different subtitles and did the same thing. And I landed on your first 1,000 copies, a step-by-step guide to marketing your book. And over and over, like, you know, it's hard to know 100% if you made the right decision, but I ended up getting hundreds of people, probably by the end, a good 800 or 900 people's opinion on my title. And I landed on what I thought was a really good one. And so anytime you can base something on data instead of your own opinion, when you're too close to the project anyway, it's a really good thing. And what's surprising is how much publishers do the exact, they don't, they just kind of sit around and say, I think the title should be blah, 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 blah. And they have no data to back it up whatsoever. And so just getting a little bit of data of what a lot of people's split second decisions are, I think that's really good, because that's how people make decisions on buying books.
Which is fascinating. And amusingly, you said it should be intuitive at the front when you said it should be intuitive why it's important, why the title should be important. It's amazing how many people don't think like that.
Oh,
I mean, it's amazing. And I'm just as guilty as anyone. Like the first book I did self-published was How to Enjoy Your Job or Find a New One, which, let's face it, no one wants to enjoy their job. So I changed it to Career Change a few years later with a subtitle, and sells better, but mainly based on SEO. So did you do, I mean, your first 1,000 copies, I wouldn't think is an SEO title. Your subtitle sounds more SEO, but what, you know, did you do any kind of SEO research on for title?
I didn't think much about SEO because I wanted people, when they saw the title, to just grab a hold of it. And so I didn't think much on the SEO side. And now that you say that, maybe I should. But I think more on the, you know, I'm going to do the promotion. I don't really rely too much on the Amazon engine for people to find it. I'm going out and promoting the book. And what I found is that the title works really well when people hear it.
No,
you know, especially for new authors, because they dream of hitting that 1,000 book number. And so it ended up working really well. And so SEO to me for a book title should be secondary to just how people respond. I'm more interested in how people respond than in how computers respond to it.
Yeah, so you're right. If you're driving your own marketing, it should be more about the response. Whereas if you're an author who's not doing any marketing, then the search engine's really important. So those are great. Now, do you think PickFu would be useful for fiction authors? And do you have any tips on fiction titles?
You know, I've gone back and forth on that, and I just don't have much experience in picking fiction titles. In fact, I have my first fiction novel coming out next month.
Oh.
And like, I just threw out a name for it, and it was like the test name, and then it just never got changed. And I'm like, but then I'm like, it's different because people are making decisions for fiction. If I look at how I make decisions for fiction, it's not based on the title. It's mostly based on like the genre / what I heard about it / how many reviews, like, it's more about the ecosystem around the book of why I decide to read fiction. And so I don't think it's important because I've seen bad titles, but it's not as important as nonfiction, where you're trying to be very clear about what people are getting out of your book. You know, with fiction, it's always, I'm getting entertainment, I'm getting a great story. With nonfiction, it's much different. You have to be very clear about what people are getting out of the read.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, well, you mentioned there like 1,000 is important, and it's funny. You know, you get to a point where 1,000, there was a point where 1,000 was a big number, and then there's a point where 1,000 is a disappointing number.
Right.
So why is 1,000, you know, why did you put your stake in the ground around that? Why is that important?
So, you know, the vast majority of books that come out sell about 250 copies in their first year. That's traditionally published as well. So if you think about that number, 250, it's probably about the number of people you know. So like, if just the people kind of in my network buy a copy, and then maybe a couple more outside of that, I'll hit about 250. So most books can hit 250. But once you hit 1,000 copies, you've done something interesting. You've gotten about 750 people that you don't know to buy your book. So you're doing something that has kind of got you to this place where people that don't know you personally are willing to invest in your book. And so if you're a new author, if you're just getting started, you know, and you come out with a book, just you kind of spamming your friends and family and coworkers, you can probably sell about 200, 250 copies. But you're going to stop there. So once you hit 1,000, you're doing something in marketing. Either you've got a blog with a following, or you've been on a bunch of podcasts, or you've done something that's kind of bumped you up to that next level. And what I found is once you sell 1,000, getting to 2,000 is a whole lot easier than that first 1,000. And so I look at that number as like, if you're just getting started, if you're just starting to build your author platform, your goal should be 1,000 copies. And once you get that 1,000 copies, you've got something working that's gotten you over that initial hump that most authors don't get anywhere near.
Hmm. Well, and also I think it is a good aim, because so many authors, you know, often their first book expect to get a movie deal, like, you know, that's, whereas 1,000 copies at least is achievable and measurable. It's a good,
yes,
solid goal, basically.
Well, it's that measure, like once I've hit 1,000, I've reached that goal and I can now reevaluate what my goal is. Because after this, the first year, about 4 or 5 months after my book came out, you know, my book was doing that, like I sold over 1,000 copies in like 9 days. And then of course, you know, it started kind of ticking down every month. And came out in June, about November, I was like, man, I hate how little my book is selling. So I put on my blog, I blasted out to everybody, I'm going to sell 10,000 copies by its 1 year anniversary. And then every week I just shared how I was trying to sell copies, and I ended up hitting over 10,000 copies in that first year. Mm. Because that 10,000 is the next number, really. I heard from several people that have been around a long time in the industry that if you can sell 10,000 copies in a year, your book has kind of reached this point where it's going to perpetually sell for a long time. Mm. And so to me, that first 1,000 is a good marker. And then once you move past that, your goal should be 10,000.
Mm. And then 100. And then
that's
million.
Right. I'm still working on 100,000. That's a lot of authors.
It's funny how it goes from 10,000 to 100,000, and after 100,000, it's kind of like, now I need to sell 1,000,000 books.
Yeah, and you move it right before you get there, yes. Right? So at like 9,500 copies, you're like, well, it'll be successful when I'm at 100,000. You know?
Yeah, and then I wonder if this is the curse of the creative, or I don't know whether it's ambition, that you're never happy.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, actually, to get real for a second, like I've had to like stop, because I was doing that. Like the first big launch I did, I got my client to number one on the New York Times list and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post the same week.
Oh, well, you're screwed then.
Well, I was immediately unhappy, yeah, because I had another one coming up in 3 months. And then I hit number two on that one, and I felt bad because we didn't hit number one. And yeah, I'm like, what is wrong with me that I can't like enjoy success? Yeah. You know, so I really, I have some friends now that like whenever I do something that I'm proud of, they're like, are you like taking time to enjoy the fact that you've actually succeeded at something? Mm. Because, you know, I could always find somebody more popular than me, more successful than me, more money than me, whatever. Mm. And so that is a well that will never be filled. Mm. And so I look at it as like, I set my goals now. When I hit those goals, I take time to celebrate, and then I reevaluate what I want to do next.
Oh, well done. Well, since we're on video, people on video, I have a success journal now, which I got from Austin Kleon, you know, did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I now have 3 books on my desk, a journal, a diary, and this is my everyday what I've achieved type of journal, which is
Have
great.
You heard of autofocus? Have you heard of this?
Is that an app?
No. It's a productivity system.
Oh, okay. Tell me about that.
Okay, so it is the best productivity system I have ever come up with. Okay, because I'm like, I've tried them all. I've done the GTD thing. And GTD is like, if it takes 200 pages to explain it, it's too complicated.
Yeah, okay? That's getting things done for people who don't know GTD. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is a pen and a notebook. And all you do is every time you write, every time something comes to mind, you write it down. And there's a whole system. Go Google it. It's Mark Forrester. And just Google autofocus system, and it's like 4 pages that walks you through it. I've been doing it for like 2.5 months now, and it has kept me more organized. Things don't fall off my to-do list. It's perfect for creatives. So that's a little tidbit for everybody.
No, that's great. And I think this comes back. You have a thing that you put on Twitter as well recently. Think system instead of goal.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, you know, feeds into what you're saying. So you mentioned, can you do something every week that will move you forward?
Yeah.
Because I know people get really overwhelmed with all this stuff. So, you know, how have you done that? What are some examples of like, you know, the two things that you would do every week compared to almost the everyday stuff like Twitter or social media?
So the first thing I do is ruthlessly cut out things that don't get me what I want out of life. Mm. So all of my social media is completely automated with a tool called Meet Edgar, which is a it's you know how Buffer, you put stuff in and it kind of, this is like you create a library of content and it just keeps cycling through it.
Ooh, that's so good.
I literally don't look at what's going on Facebook and Twitter. I just keep, every couple of weeks I add new stuff to it to make the library grow, because Facebook and Twitter don't get me to my goals. They make me feel good about doing stuff, but it doesn't actually move me forward.
But it's fun, Tim.
It is fun. But see, that's the difference is like, I'm fine with having fun. I watch TV every night with my wife for like 45 minutes or an hour. Okay. That is fun. It's okay to have fun, but people do it and they call it work and it's not work. It's fun. And so, so what I do is, I have a very structured day. I do the same thing day in and day out. I'm up at usually making coffee by 4:15 in the morning, and then I work until about 9. I homeschool my kids until noon, and then I work again until 5. And so I have a very structured day. I work 4 days a week. I get up, and that morning time, I do creative work. So whether it's creating videos, whether it's doing writing or whatever, that's my creative work, because nobody's going to call me or email me or anything at 5 o'clock in the morning. And so so that's what I do. And that's more of a system of like, I want to create on a daily basis. And so I set this time aside and I am going to create. And I always sit down knowing what I'm supposed to be working on that day. So, and actually the last couple of weeks has been hard, because all of a sudden I have like 7 new projects that I want to start. And so what I'm having to do is, you know, put them in order. This is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to get them done. And then every morning I just chip away at them, and I have a goal of what I want done by the end of the year, you know, but it's not a goal of what I'm going to get done today. Cause you know what? I did 40 minutes of video today and I plugged it into my computer and everything got corrupted. You know, and if my goal was to get X amount of done today, I would be devastated because I won't hit that goal. But I just have a system. I know if I get up and I create 4 mornings a week for a decent amount of time, I'm going to eventually hit my goals. And so, you know, I think about goals. I think about where I want to be. But it's much more important to have your life systematized in a way where it's hard to not do these things, you know. And it's harder to do, it's hard to procrastinate. Like I installed that newsfeed extractor plugin where you go to Facebook and it wipes out your newsfeed. You can't see your newsfeed, right? Because I have Facebook groups I'm supposed to be a part of, but then I end up watching cat videos for an hour, you know? And so I put these things in place where it makes it really, really hard to do the things I don't want to do and really easy to do the things I do want to do. And so I just look at how can I structure my life in a way where it's easy to make the good decisions on a daily basis. And then what I find is I look back over the next 3 months and the last 3 months, and I got a lot done.
It's funny. I've just have you seen Gretchen Rubin's latest book, Better Than Before?
I haven't read it yet.
Oh, well, I recommend it. I'm reading it at the moment. It's on habits, you know.
And
she talks about personality types. And it sounds like you're an upholder, which is, you know, someone who is very motivated by inner motivation and external motivation, which makes you quite rare. So if people listening are going, I can't possibly do what Tim is doing, there are these personality types. So, you know, I recommend that book to people who are struggling to put habits into place.
But I will tell you this, I've not always been this way. Like I'm the get up late guy. Every morning it's a struggle to get up in the morning. Like I used to procrastinate horror. I'd like play video games for 3 hours because I was scared to do anything creative. And it's, to me, the change has been over a long period of time, a lot of grace, right? Because a lot of people tend to kind of beat up on themselves. And I used to do that a lot too. And so as soon as I was like, hey, look, am I a little bit better than I used to be? Am I better than before? You know, and just keep kind of plugging along. And I just kept like backing up, you know, I'd get up at 7:30, then I'd get up at 7 for a while. Then I'd try 3:30 for a week, and that was too early. And so what I'm just constantly doing is like tweaking a little bit. Can I change a little bit? Can I add a little bit? Can I do a little bit more? And I constantly keep the vision of where I'm going in front of me. because that's what drives me. You know, it's not money. It's not status. It's about the kind of life that I want to live. And I have a plan of how I'm going to get there. And so I just kind of, when I wake up and my alarm's going off at 4:30 or 4:15 in the morning, and I'm just like, I don't want to do this. I'm thinking about, if I don't get this done this morning, I'm not going to get where I want to go. And so I get up.
No, I mean, that's great. Really, you know, very good. This is almost like a productivity discussion. It's very good.
Yeah, sorry. I'm such a nerd about it.
No, it's so interesting. And I mean, I've also made changes over time. And, you know, and it always looks bigger if you look at, like, compare 10 years ago to where you are now. I mean, it's just crazy, crazy different. But just coming back to marketing, because you mentioned that have you just finished your novel?
Yeah, it's at the editor now.
It's at the editor. So, you know, you're kind of known for nonfiction so far. And have you, well, first of all, tell us about this this novel. Can you?
Yeah, so it is, it's about an assassin. It still feels weird talking. I keep thinking, like, I should talk about it like it's normal, but I feel really weird talking about
it.
So it's about, it's set in like the medieval times, and it's about a wizard that's like going through the kingdom and like just wiping out cities. And so an assassin is sent to kill him. And so that's what it's about.
Fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's set in, have you heard of, so this is going to be a plug. So I'm part owner in a new publishing venture called Wondermint. And we started this series of books called Apocalypse Weird. And so we've released, I think we're at 8 books now. So it's going to be set in that apocalypse weird kind of
sounds
world.
Sounds good. I like the sound of it.
Yeah. So we, so it's supposed to come out next month. It's at the editor and she's getting on to me about all of my passive voice.
Yeah. The first novel, you learn a lot with the first novel. It gets easier. Yeah. It gets easier.
Yeah.
And, well, some things get easier.
I kept telling her, because she was, you know, she's like, well, there's some problems. And by the end, she's like, it's kind of a mess. And I'm like, that's fine. We can fix it. You know, you're not going to hurt my feelings. But I'm so.
So what I was going to ask was,
yeah,
you wrote this book really, you know, as an expert in nonfiction marketing. You're now doing fiction. What do you see as the big differences between fiction and nonfiction, you know, in terms of marketing?
You know, I've worked with, you know, I've done a bunch of Hugh Howey stuff for several years now, and I've worked with a lot of other indie fiction writers. And, you know, what I see, so here's what's interesting. So I announced that I was writing this novel, and I immediately get a lot of people emailing me saying they can't wait to read it. And then people continue to say, oh, you know, when's it coming out? Okay, logically, that makes no sense, because it's my first novel. It's going to suck. Like, if you want good fiction, you shouldn't be reading my fiction, you know? But why are they excited about reading my book? It's because they're fans of me, right? And so what I see every author should be doing is not creating a platform around their book or any kind of specific genre, nonfiction or fiction. They should be building a platform as an author. And as people become fans of them, they're going to want to be a part of everything they do. You've done this. This is what allows you to kind of cross over back and forth, is because people become fans of Joanna Penn. So they're going to read kind of whatever you come out with. You know, I read Stephen King, you know, when he came out with that book, he came out with this short book about gun control.
Yeah. And like, I bought it too.
Yeah, I bought it and read it because I like Stephen King. Why do I care about his opinion on gun control? It's like, well, because I like Stephen King. I like the way he sees the world. I'm a fan of him. And so I look at fiction, you know, what I look at it is I should be building a platform for me, the author, and get people connected to my worldview and the way I think about things. And then I can extract books out of that. And so I'm going to be able to sell my fiction book just like I sold my nonfiction book, because people are fans of me. Now, will I sell as well? Probably not, because I built a following around, you know, book marketing, and not everybody's going to want to read a first-time fantasy novel. But at the same time, I'm going to sell a lot more than if I had no platform whatsoever. Mm. And what I found is, and I see this over and over, if authors build a fan base around themselves, they can pivot, they can go to different genres, they can come out with different products, they can do all kinds of different things because they built a platform around themselves. So I really get frustrated when fiction authors say, well, you know, all that, the marketing stuff works for nonfiction, but it doesn't work for fiction. It's like, well, that's because you just are sitting in your hole thinking about your fiction book, and that's the only thing you have to give to this world. And it's like, if you're building a platform around how you see the world, how you can help people, the kind of things you can give back, and you start just trying to actively help people, they're going to connect with you, and they're going to want to be a part of everything that you're doing.
No, I think you're right. Although I would say from my experience, probably only about between 5 to 10% moved into the fiction side of things for me, from my nonfiction to my fiction.
But it does two things for you, though. First of all, the 5 to 10% is more than what most fiction authors have. The other thing is your platform gives you access to influencers that you wouldn't have otherwise, right? Mm. So if you want to do something to promote your fiction, you have this entire group of people that you've connected to that are willing to help you do something. Mm. And so your platform isn't just your connections to fans, it's connections to influencers as well. And so I feel like, yes, that's true. You know, you're not all are going to hop over, and maybe a small percentage, but still having a platform around yourself and your name gives you so many opportunities that you wouldn't if you just think of yourself as I'm a person who wrote this fiction book.
Mm. No, I totally agree with that. And then I also wanted to ask you, so your book came out June 2013, mm-hmm. which is almost 2 years ago now. Is that incredible? Yeah.
That's insane.
It is insane. So I wondered, you know, what do you think has changed in marketing in the last 2 years? Are there any shifts that you see, or, you know, anything in that has developed, or anything you see coming?
You know, I feel like, so in my book, I outline kind of the three steps of marketing. You know, you have to have permission, content, and outreach. And I kind of go into what those are. And what I find is, because I'm always much more interested in the underlying systems and strategies than I am in any particular tactics. Mm. So an example, you know, of a tactic would be back when you could kind of like vary your, you know, go to free on your book and spike your ranking and then throw a price in there, and all of a sudden you could get a bunch of sales. Well, there were all these authors depending on that tactic. Mm. And when that tactic got pulled by Amazon, they were kind of hung.
Yeah.
And so I had an author that emailed me the other day, and they were complaining about some changes Amazon made and how like all their book sales have gone down. I'm like, that's because you're 100% relying on Amazon, and Amazon's going to do whatever they want. You know, it's the same thing that happened with Facebook when they made all those changes to the pages. So many people got in an uproar, but I'm like, Facebook doesn't care about you. They care about the user that are coming to their site. And so, so some tactics change. Tactics change every day. But what I see is that now more than ever, and it's going to always be this way, if you can get permission to stay in contact with your fans and communicate with them in a way that gets their attention and drives action, you're gonna succeed. Mm. And so email lists are still the best way to do that, which I know you know. And then I just look at everything as a way to get more people on my email list. So blog, any kind of social media, any kind of interviews, everything is all a funnel into my email list because that's where I have the longest term connection. Mm-hmm. Now, if something comes along that works better than email, I will be all over it. But for now, email is still the best way to stay in contact with your fans. So that's what stayed the same. And then tactics have changed. You know, Amazon's changed a lot, and different things that you can do with social media has changed a lot. But I just don't really worry that much about those because if you get too caught up in these little tactics and constantly jumping to the next tactic but not having an underlying plan of how it all works together, you're going to always be in a rush and kind of up and down and up and down.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking about it. And I mean, for me, the biggest thing is podcasting in that, mm-hmm. you know, 2 years ago, I mean, I've had a podcast since 2009, so I was a bit early.
Yeah.
And now it's like, it's just gone nuts. And with, you know, Apple announcing CarPlay going to be in all the cars and Google Auto and stuff. And I've basically, you know, whereas we used to guest post, now it seems more effective to guest podcast, right?
That yeah. And this is a whole lot easier than writing a guest post.
Exactly. To the point where I now, when people ask me to do interviews on text, I say no. I'll be on your podcast, but I, you know, it takes more than an hour, doesn't it, to write stuff, and then you have to check it all.
Yeah, you got to like proofread and everything. Yeah. It's a whole mess.
And then it's kind of more quotable, and people tweet quotes, you know, and stuff. And but with this, people are more forgiving, I think, of what we might say.
Yeah, and I just, you know, again, but this is like, but that's an example of a tactic changing. You know, but this is outreach. So this is me introducing my, you know, I just need to move people from not knowing I exist to knowing I exist. And that's all outreach is. And so it used to be guest posts. Now it seems to be podcasts. In 5 years, it's going to be something else. But as long as I'm constantly looking for new ways to introduce myself to people and make sure more people are learning that I even exist, I'm going to continue to win. And so if you get like too narrow-minded on like for the all the, I mean, there's how many courses now on how to do guest posts, and I'm like, it doesn't, I mean, it can work, but it's not like it used to be.
No, not at all.
And it's the same thing about blogs. Like I'm actually had several of my clients just shut down their blogs because now it's like, you know, 10 years ago, having a blog, you would get traffic. That's all it took. You know, and now you start a blog, you're competing with Huffington Post, you know, so it's just a different world. So if you are somebody that's only thinking about blogging, you're going to have trouble. But if you're just constantly like, you know, I hold all the tools with open hands, and it's like whatever will work for permission content and outreach, that's what I'm going to do.
No, I agree with you. And then on that, I did notice that you mentioned being an introvert.
Yeah.
On your site, as am I, and as are many of my listeners. And if people are unsure, introverts get energy from being alone and not with people. Being with people physically, we love it, you know, sometimes, but it's very tiring. So I wondered, I mean, you mentioned there about, you know, people need to hear about me or whatever. How do you deal with all of this as an introvert?
Well, I mean, one thing is nice is that, like, you're the first person I've talked to today. So, you know, it's like, you know.
I'm a bit like that, too.
Yeah, I'm in my basement office. And, like, I'm besides my family, you're, like, the first person I've seen today. So, you know, so I spend, you know, most of my time alone. And I look at it as, you know, I just try to regulate it. I don't travel that much for that. The last conference I went to, you know, I'd go out and do like, I did two sessions and led two sessions, and I love it, and I'm like personable and I get good feedback. And then like, as soon as it's over, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm exhausted. And so what I find though, is that you can't let it be an excuse, you know? So, and this all comes down to, well, what do you want out of life? You know, if you want to be a successful author in today's world, you can't use your introversion as an excuse to just never talk to anybody. And so what I just try to do is, you know, this is a conversation one-on-one with somebody that has, you know, the same interest as I do. This is pretty easy, you know. And so I just look for some things that I can do and get used to doing. And there's just things I just force myself to try new things. And if after a while I hate it, I just won't do it anymore. I'll find something else. But I just encourage people to just try things and don't use it as an excuse. I actually can't remember the exact advice I gave in that post you're referring to. But that's the biggest thing is I talk to authors and like, I list out like five things they could try and they're like, well, I can't do that. I'm an introvert. I can't do that. I'm an introvert. And I'm like, okay, then don't do anything and just write and, you know, put it on Amazon and sell five copies and keep going, you know? And so, what I want to do is accept the reality of what is, but at the same time, look for ways to kind of get around those things, you know. So I don't travel much. I'm not around people a lot. I do very little local networking, but I look for ways that I can do things that I enjoy. So having a conversation over Skype is pretty easy, so I can do that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, much of what I love about online marketing is most of it you can do at home on your own. Like video, like YouTube, I find hilarious because people think you have to be outgoing to do YouTube. I'm like, no, you're just sitting on your own in your house.
Well, you know, really, here's what the truth is that people call it introversion. And what they're really saying is, I'm scared of rejection. And those are two very different things.
Very different.
So they're scared to put themselves out and be rejected. And so they say, well, I'm an introvert. I can't do it. And it's like, no. Everybody has fear of rejection. Mm-hmm. And so... So those are two very different things. So they don't go after the podcast interview, not because they're an introvert, but because they're afraid of being rejection, which I totally get. You know, I've been rejected as much as anybody. And so, but that's where, like, I come back to, let's be honest about our, you know, whenever we're lying to ourselves, we're just holding ourselves up, you know? So that's where, about, you know, when we were talking about social media, I'm like, I'm fine with having fun on social media. Just don't lie to yourself about what you're doing, you know, and then just do it. And so the same thing is like, because once you say, okay, I'm afraid of rejection, now I have something I can deal with. I can Google that and find help on that. I can talk to friends about that. I can kind of start managing that. But if I call it something else to avoid the actual situation, I'm going to stop and I'm not going to move forward.
Mm. No, good. Hope that's challenged people listening. Because, I mean, it doesn't... And I still think as authors, if you get into multimedia, you are so ahead of most authors, because most authors will not go through the pain barrier of learning some basic technical stuff and putting your face and your voice out there.
And please, like, it gets easier. Like, yeah. Okay, so the first time I ever tried to create a video... I sat at my computer and was on like Facebook and all this other shit, like trying to like work up the nerve. It took me like 45 minutes to like hit the record button, and then it was awful. So I had to delete it. And then I sat there for again, like, you know, I mean, and now I just flip on the camera and go. And so it's like, it gets easier. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's hard. Yes, it looks easy when Joanna and Tim are sitting here talking. But trust me, it's like horrible the first few times, you know, and like the first few interviews I ever did, I'm like, you know, like I'm keeping my hands down because they're shaking, you know. And so it's like, yes, it's hard and it's scary and you're going to face rejection. But I mean, that's part of it. And you won't die.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll just and you'll make mistakes. And I've said like stupidest stuff, and you know, it's no big deal. Like, you just keep moving forward.
It's not, and you know, I'll admit, I think this is episode 215, and I still have pounding hearts and sweaty hands, you know, and I'm nervous talking to, you know, as the introvert, I hate phoning people, you know, it's just a nightmare. But you know, I still do, I like, you know, once I'm in there, everything's fine, and you know, you're a nice guy, so you're not that scary. But no, this is true. You got to get over it. Right, we're running out of time. So you have a fantastic 30-day free email course. Tell us a bit about that and also what else you offer authors.
Yeah, so I have, if you go to timgrahl.com, that's T-I-M-G-R-A-H-L. I have like the worst last name. there's a free 30, you sign up and I'll send you a free 30-day course on how to build your platform as an author. Or if you go in, I have a bunch of resources. I have interviews with authors. I have PDFs you can download. I have audio. A bunch of just resources I put up for free that you can take advantage of. So that's all there for you to take advantage of. And of course, I have my book, Your First 1,000 Copies.
Well, that sounds fantastic, Tim. And yeah, people can go and check that out. So thanks so much for your time. That was brilliant.
Thanks for having me, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.